Hello, and welcome to the Let's Talk Attachments podcast. My name is Jessica Da Silva, and I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist and an attachment coach, helping adults end their unhealthy dating patterns and create stronger, secure relationships. Attachment theory gives us insight into how we currently experience love through understanding our earlier attachment dynamics. I created this podcast as a safe space to share stories and insights on different aspects of attachment so that you can better understand how this manifests in your own life. My only request is that you listen with an open heart and an open mind. So without further ado, let's get into it. Today on the podcast, we have Dr. Anita Coonley. Anita is an author, esteemed scholar, expert counselor, and speaker. She is passionately committed to her mission of sharing simple psychological techniques that empower counselors and individuals to improve their lives and make a positive impact on others. She has authored or co-authored 9 books, including the acclaimed The Mr. Rogers Effect, which unpacks the incredible influence of Fred Rogers through a psychological lens. And in her upcoming book, The 4 Relationship Styles, How Attachment Theory Can Help in Your Search for Lasting Love, she integrates classic attachment theory to provide readers with valuable insights into understanding both themselves and those with whom they aspire to build meaningful relationships with. And it's this very book that I wanted to touch on with her, as she does such a wonderful job in really just simplifying the 4 attachment styles and illustrating how they manifest in our lives. In this conversation, she breaks down the 4 relationship styles, aka attachment styles. We talk about strengths and challenges of each attachment style, how knowing the relationship styles help us in dating and relationships, tips to help incompatible attachment styles, or, you know, the relationship styles work, right? So for instance, the anxious and avoidant attachment style, and in her words, we're at the investigator and the security guard relationship style dynamic, and current research on how to shift from insecure to secure attachment from a realistic and transparent lens. So let's dive in. Hello, Anita, and welcome to the Let's Talk Attachments podcast.
Hi, Jessica. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. And I was just mentioning how Anita looks super cute right now and very on point and on theme with her pink sweater with hearts on it, all on attachment and relationships and love. I love it.
Oh, thank you so much. Yes, definitely feeling the pink vibes to go with the pink cover of the new book.
Yeah. So I'm excited to kind of ask you, you know, questions about your book, specifically the 4 relationship styles. But before we get into it, I always like to ask, especially for those of you that are, you know, aware of attachment styles and have been doing this work for a long time, where did you learn about attachment theory, and how has it personally, just shaped or changed your life?
Oh yeah. I love that question, Jessica. I first learned about attachment theory when I was in graduate school. I was, studying to become a counselor, and I was talking with one of my professors, Dr. Eric Scalise, and he was the department chair then. He had this huge library of books, and he handed me this great book called Attachments by Tim Clinton and Gary Sibsey, which I loved. And I read it. And ever since he handed me that book and I started studying attachment, I just never put down the topic. I just became more and more interested in it. And the more I learned about attachment, the more I realized that attachment theory explains so much of our interpersonal dynamics. And I just had all these light bulbs going off. And I thought, oh man, this explains so much. And so I just continued studying that. I went through training through UC Berkeley with Mary Main to learn about the adult attachment interview, the AAI, and the coding system for that, and did some research studies. And I've been working on it ever since, like the last 20 years.
That's or so. Amazing. And so you mentioned Mary Main. So was there, you worked, tell me about that process in terms of working with her.
Well, there is a protocol that she developed. And by the way, she kind of touched the hand that touched the hand because John Bowlby, as you know, the developer of attachment theory, he worked with Mary Ainsworth. And then Mary Ainsworth came to the US because they met at the Tavistock Clinic in London. And then she had Mary Mayne and Bob Marvin, you know, as students. And then they both went on to do their work. And Mayne developed the adult attachment interview and called the AAI for short, but it's a basically an hour-long semi-structured interview where the interviewer asks questions about your attachment style, and then a coder goes through and codes that, and it's an amazingly thorough system. They've been able to predict, I think, with over 70% accuracy, the attachment style of a child years later based on the way their mom answers the questions when they're pregnant with a child. So really impressive assessment. And I went through the she has some different trainers, and I went through the coding training for that several years ago. So my colleague Gary Simpson talked me into that, and if I had known what it involved, I probably would not have gone through it at the time. But now, later on, that now I'm past it, I thank him. At the time, it was certainly a huge amount of work, but very educational.
And I was going to ask more about that because nowadays there's a lot of different attachment styles you can take. I even offer one, but it's like 5 minutes, right? And overall, it gives you a general idea of where you may fall on the spectrum. But if someone wants to take the assessment, for instance, where can they learn more about doing that?
So Jessica, like you, I also have a shorter assessment. I think it's nice to have a battery and take a couple different ones. The AAI, because it's an hour-long interview, typically you would do this like through your counselor or an online counselor that is like certified or trained in the AAI. And then they would work with you to send it off to a transcriber because someone has to transcribe it according to a specific protocol, and then it has to go to a coder to code it. So it's not used as often in private practice counseling. So there's some hospitals that use it that do it with their intake. So I would say you can it's a good starting point would be to ask your counselor about it. And then the questions are like if like let's say you have life coaches or counselors listening, the questions are online for the adult attachment interview. You can look at the questions, and anyone can use those sort of conversationally to find out information. But to go through the official testing protocol, it's very involved.
That's what I imagined. But it's good that people have that option if that's something that they want to dig deeper into.
Yes, definitely.
So I wanted to ask you, and what is your specific attachment style? Or, I'm sure maybe you've done a lot of work to become securely attached. But what was your secure attach or your attachment style when you discovered attachment theory?
Well, you know, when I was going through the AAI training, I learned about the style called Earn Secure. And with Earn Secure, it's not necessarily in like all the textbooks or talked about as much. It's kind of a subtype of secure where you may have experienced some challenges in your early life, but somehow you developed a secure style. And then there's some subtypes of secure. Like which I call in the four relationship styles the networker style, because people with a secure style are such master connectors. And then the security guard style, where the kind of like the security guard guarding a perimeter might have some avoidant tendencies where they're pushing away, maintaining independence. And so for that style, you know, I would say for me, in terms of attachment, I tend to have more of like the networker style with a bit of the security guard as like a subtype.
Interesting. And would you say that most people kind of fall on a spectrum? Not everyone is 100% one type or one style. We all kind of maybe have a little bit of one, two, three, or four.
Yes, I know we like to, you know, in general as humans, we like to organize things and kind of put them in our neat boxes to understand them. But I think you're so right, Jessica. Like that's a great point. It's a more of a continuum, and I don't think we will fit really rigidly into a box. Even when I was coding AAI, you know, everybody tends to have a primary style and then a secondary style. So you always list like the first and the second. So let's say you might be secure, but then you might also have some what I call the networker, but you might also have some anxious tendencies or some the investigator's tendencies. Or you could be a high functioning firefighter with some secure tendencies where you really still value relationships. So yeah, I think we can have a little bit of both, or a
Interesting.
little bit of multiple. And it's on a continuum. As you know, if we have lower levels of anxiety, lower levels of avoidance, that tends to be the more secure networker style where you're moving towards connection and connecting with people. But if you tend to have a little bit more avoidance, that may be more where you're kind of moving away, but maybe you're not avoidant to the point that that's your primary style.
Got it. Got it. And what I've noticed too is that these styles tend to kind of manifest in different ways with different people or situations. Right. With some people, I see myself feeling really secure. Other people, I find myself being a little bit more dismissive. So it's interesting how it does manifest and surface with different situations and people. Yeah.
Yeah, almost like a different people bring out different sides of you. That
Yeah.
makes sense.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, I think it's fascinating how you explain these different styles, like the firefighter, and can you tell us more a little more about that and kind of what that looks like?
Yeah, thanks for asking. I think some people like us, we love attachment theory and we've been reading about it for years and studying it. But then there's some people that they're kind of new to attachment theory and they're still trying to wrap their brain around, what it means. But we understand the concept of jobs and professions pretty readily. And so basically, just like pursuing a profession or job helps us meet our financial needs, our relationship styles, our attachment styles help us to meet our psychological and emotional and relational needs. And so the job metaphor sort of represents the way or the strategy that people use to meet those needs. So, for example, like the business networker represents the secure style of moving towards connection and moving towards other people to meet those relational needs.
Interesting. Okay. And so, okay. So there's the, yeah, if you can like walk us through those different names and what that looks like, that would be great.
Okay, sure. Yeah, so you mentioned the firefighter style, and the other thing I think that's important is, sometimes people can be concerned that, if they maybe their style is not secure right away, or they want their style to be secure. But as we know, denial heals nothing. So it's really helpful to just think about, even if you are secure, maybe what could be your subtype, or maybe what tendencies could you have that aren't always secure. And knowing that all four of the styles represent the way we adapted to our environments and our resilience and allow us a method for coping with whatever situations we're dealing with. So with the firefighter, they have fought some fires. They've walked through fire that may have been in terms of trauma or abuse or loss, but they've been through some difficult things. And some of the benefits of having this the style that they have is they tend to be adept or experienced at dealing with difficult people. They know how to navigate those difficult relationships, and they can have an uncanny depth of character and a flexibility. So they may use the strategies of all the three other styles. On the other hand, a challenge that comes along with that style is that they can get stuck in their emotions and sometimes not know exactly how to shift gears. In the literature, this is sometimes called unresolved for loss or abuse or disorganized, but I prefer the firefighter style because I think it speaks more to the strength of character of the person that people that tend to develop this attachment style, they may have gone through situations where, in order to get their needs met, they literally had to kind of walk through fires or walk toward danger or uncertain attachment relationships. And so there's a depth of character, there's a an emotional strength that comes with those kinds of experiences.
And I'm assuming you're speaking of the fearful, avoidant, or disorganized attachment style, the firefighter.
Yeah.
And I love, by the way, Anita, that you speak to the strengths and challenges, because You're right. Like through this adversity, it's not that we just, become these weak individuals. We gain a lot of strength, and a lot of skills through those experiences. So I appreciate you speaking to that as well.
Thank you so much for noticing that, Jessica. I really appreciate that because I think it's just so easy to for sometimes people in the field to kind of pathologize what they might call insecure attachment. So I really appreciate you like recognizing that because you're right. There's so much strength that we develop through those experiences. Yeah, and I kind of like the term firefighter.
Yeah, I do
Comes
too.
the other options.
So my attachment style for many years was the disorganized, fearful, avoidant attachment. And when doing this work, with the fearful avoidant, we can experience so much shame with what we've experienced in the past. So I had to really pick and build on my strengths in order to build this and cultivate this confidence to just keep on going and keep on living. So that's why, again, I really appreciate you speaking to that because it helps. It helps when we can kind of build on our strengths rather than focus on all the negatives and all the problems that we have,
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Thank you for sharing that. I think it's so powerful when people share, their journey of, starting with a style and, going on this sort of journey of self-discovery and learning the strengths and challenges and building on those. I think that's exciting.
And so, okay, so we have the firefighter. What's next?
Okay, so next is the investigator style. And just like an investigator that may be on coming to a crime scene and they're looking for different clues or looking for information, or even the person who is like holding a flower and they're perpetually picking off the petals. He loves me, he loves me not. He loves me, he loves me not. The investigator is sort of perpetually examining that question and they're looking for clues as to whether or not they're worthy of love and others love them. They tend to be some of their strengths are they tend to be very attuned to other people's emotions and moods. They tend to have high levels of attentiveness and they tend to be invested in their relationships. They also have the ability to set aside their own wants and needs to take care of others. On the other hand, the challenge that can come along with this, like every strength, if we overuse it, it can become a challenge. Investigators may be so attuned to others' concerns and feelings, they may at times be asleep to their own and ignore their own needs or emotions to their detriment.
So I'm assuming you're speaking of the anxious attachment style.
Yes. Yeah, the investigators tend to be higher in anxiety, low in avoidance, so they still move towards, but they can get tangled up with it, some of their preoccupations as well.
Got it. Okay. And towards the end, I do want to ask you ways in which we can start cultivating that secure attachment, if that's something that we're open to doing. So for the listeners, don't worry, we will get to that. Okay, so we have the firefighter, we have the investigator. Who's next?
Next, we have the security guard. The security guard, they tend to just like a police officer or security guard protecting the perimeter of an estate. If you imagine them with outstretched arms saying, get back. The relational security guard is concerned about protecting their freedom, their independence. They tend to have had some experience with rejection. They were pushed away and turned away to a certain extent. So and everybody experiences that to some degree. We all have experienced rejection, but for the security guard, if that becomes their primary style, that has become their primary experience through many of their interpersonal relationships to the point that they sort of anticipate that being pushed away. So rather than approach relationships and risk rejection and risk being pushed away, they just tend to turn away naturally. They tend to be highly independent. They are concise communicators and they tend to be highly competent. They have to develop a number of competencies to take care of themselves and meet their own needs. On the other hand, this tendency towards avoidance can lead them to avoid connection. So it may make it more challenging for other styles to connect with them, and they may miss out on some of the closeness that positive relationships can bring.
Yeah. All right. So we got dismissive avoidance, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Okay. And I love how you explain it in this way because it's so easy to kind of understand, right? When you explain it in these kind of characters that symbolize, certain behaviors and kind of ways of operating. Okay, and then the last one, secure attachment.
Yes, and thank you for saying that because I think thinking in pictures is so helpful. So I have this grid, and it's in the book too, but it's got like a picture of each one, a picture of the firefighter. Almost like remember baseball cards. Like I don't know if you ever collected those growing up, but you have like a baseball card with all the stats for the player and their info. It's kind of like that, a picture of the character, and then the description, so you can kind of see it visually. I think that sometimes helps too. But yes, so the networker, they tend to be the master connectors. When they're under stress, they move towards connection. So one thing that's important to remember about attachment that makes it different from personality or Enneagram type or love language is that attachment describes the way we interact when we're under stress. It's part of that attachment behavioral system. So someone could have a really bubbly, outgoing personality, like a golden retriever, that sort of loves to be playful and connect. But once they're under stress, they could maybe need some space, or kind of move a bit away from connection. So the attachment behavioral system's activated during those times. So for the security guard, like they go away. The investigator they move towards, but they get tangled up sometimes by some of the things going on. The networker, they tend to just really be masters at connectors. They know how to ask for support when they need help getting their needs met. They know how to provide that support for others. They're excellent communicators, so they're really comfortable with their own emotions, and they can share their emotions with you in a way that's not like overwhelming or explosive or off-putting. So it's easy to sort of hear them and hear their needs and be able to meet those needs in a sense. On the other hand, for networkers, loss can be extra challenging for them because they do value their relationship so much and find so much of their identity and meaning in life from those relationships. So if they lose them, that can really rock the investigator. And conflict can be more hurtful because they're not used to that quite as much as some of the other styles. So
Fascinating.
just like a business networker at a conference, it's kind of going to other people and connecting with them and talking with them about their work. And the relational networker does the same thing when they're under stress. They're going towards their network of people and they're asking for that support and receiving it.
Interesting. Interesting. So when we talk about earned secure attachment, which, is obviously moving from that insecure style of experiencing love or connection to more of a secure approach, you mentioned there's a certain subtype, right? So this person is not going to perhaps be totally secure because they weren't raised in that way, right? What does that subtype look like when you're transitioning from that insecure to secure way of experiencing relationships and connection?
Yeah, I think, within each of these typologies, there is a level of functioning, right? And you can measure it in different ways, right? So one way of measuring it, I worked with some experts to develop an assessment. The mini assessment's available online for free, a short version of it. But it combines several different ways of assessing attachment. Like one way of measuring it is to look at your level of anxiety and avoidance. Another way is to look at your state of mind. And I recommend using, multiple assessments, right, to get a fuller picture of maybe what your type and subtypes are. So it can be good to use them together. But I think here, let's say if someone starts off with the firefighter type, they may be high in anxiety and high in avoidance. And so as they go on this journey, to healing and developing and adjusting their style, right? Because that's the good news. You're not stuck with the style you have. You can always become more secure and higher functioning within your style. So everything they do to become aware allows them to then take the next step, right? So taking the assessments is a starting point to figure out what's your style, kind of where's your anxiety level, where's your avoidance level. And then as you become higher functioning, Your anxiety and avoidance can go down. Your comfort with closeness goes up. Your comfort with emotion goes up, and you start moving in that direction. For the other two types, it looks different depending on the type. And for the firefighter, we might adjust depending on maybe avoidance is stronger, maybe anxiety is stronger. Maybe sometimes we're working on avoidance, sometimes we're working on anxiety. So we have a different pathway to healing depending on the type
Got
and
it.
the style.
Okay. And thank you for speaking to that, because the reason why I bring that up is because I have a lot of people in the community or just clients that I work with that again experience a lot of shame, because first of all, it takes a lot of work to shift our behaviors and shift our ways of kind of operating or experiencing love. So it's not a perfect process.
Right.
They often slip. I often slip, right? We often retreat to old ways of, resolving conflict or dealing with stress or anxiety. So, would you say that is normal for those of us that are trying to earn our secure attachment?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's kind of like a cha-cha or a salsa, right? Sometimes you're taking a step forward, sometimes you're taking a step back, but you're moving towards that connection. You're moving towards that relationship. You're trying to stay in the dance of life, so to speak. And we didn't develop our relationship styles overnight, right? These came hard won through thousands of interactions in our earliest relationships. And so, we develop the subconscious at what I call relationship blueprints that are sometimes subconscious, and they determine how we build and our relationships and how we behave in relationships. And so changing those is such a long process. And I think the best thing that we can do is to be kind and compassionate towards ourselves and towards our partners and others, because it's a journey. And one of the things we've learned, so I work with a research team. We've been doing some research on attachment. And one of the things that we found is that as people increase their self-compassion, their kindness towards themselves, their level of relationship anxiety or attachment anxiety tends to go down. So I actually just started recording some YouTube videos, which I can send some to you if you're interested too, but like a self-compassion break, a visualization exercise that you can do to just take a few minutes, visualize, extend some compassion towards yourself. And doing those exercises can help, because what we found was as people's level of self-compassion went up, their relationship anxiety went down. So that can be protective. So if we can be kind to ourselves, and if our encourage our clients to be kind to themselves as they go through this journey, they're likely to be able to increase or decrease their anxiety more quickly and increase their comfort with closeness and become more secure.
Wow, that's fascinating. And that's such cool research that you're doing in terms of self-compassion and kind of measuring that in regards to, our attachment style and developing that secure attachment. That's so cool.
Thank you. It's really fascinating, because I think what you mentioned earlier was really key about shame. A lot of times we can feel shame, and the scary thing about shame is that shame causes us to hide. And sometimes we can hide from ourselves and deny some of the things that we're dealing with. And when we do that, it's harder to work on them and it's harder to go through that journey. So if we can somehow encourage ourselves to shift, give ourselves permission to shift from shame to compassion, it makes the journey lighter and less painful.
Oh yes, you are preaching to the choir. I have to show myself compassion from moment to moment at this point, Anita. Like moment to
I'm
moment.
with you, Jessica. Yes, I'm with you all the time.
And it's a journey. So yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned that. It is a journey. And that self-compassion is going to be your best friend on this journey. So I wanted to ask you a popular question that I tend to get from people is, in terms of compatibility with the different relationship styles or attachment styles, are certain attachment styles more compatible with others and vice versa?
I think that's a good question. And I think there's so many factors to keep in mind, right? Because we have attachment, we have temperament, we have personality, we have, so it's hard to say that it would necessarily always be the case. However, I will say that some certain attachment patterns, attachment styles tend to be attracted to each other for all the wrong reasons and can sometimes reinforce their negative beliefs. So let's take, for example, the investigator and the security guard, right? If we look at their relationship blueprints, for example, the investigator has the relationship beliefs that may say other people are competent and able to show love, but the self is not worthy of love because maybe some kind of concern or struggle that the self has, they believe that because of that, other people won't love them, right? And so then they may go out on a date with a security guard, right? And the security guard believes their relationship blueprint says the self is worthy of love, but other people are unable to show that love, or for whatever reason, may not show that love. And so there's this sort of positive belief about the self, but negative belief about others. And then for the investigator, there's that negative belief about the self, a positive belief about others. And so they're sort of reinforcing these problematic belief systems. So it can feel comfortable because it's maybe what we're used to. However, it can kind of keep people stuck in these, especially if we have people that are kind of just starting out in their journey, having higher levels of anxiety and avoidance, and maybe not as aware of what's happening, then this can really be a recipe for disaster, the perfect storm. But what I like to keep on my desk for myself as a self-compassion exercise sort of is a little kit of Q-tips, right? And Q-tips remind me of this acronym, quit taking it personally, because we can't take other people's relationship styles personally, right? So if you are an investigator and you're in a relationship with a security guard, you may sometimes feel like they're pushing you away, they're wanting more independence, it maybe sometimes doesn't feel like they're valuing the relationship, but actually they may be feeling overwhelmed or concerned about rejection, and they're just used to kind of having this wider relationship bubble, personal bubble, so to speak. And so it's not really personal. It's just that they have these attachment needs. And if an investigator can remember that and sort of shut down their radar system, so to speak, or their anxiety, kind of tune that down a little bit, then they may be more comfortable connecting, and they might find it less painful when they hear that feedback from their security guard partner that they want some space.
Right. So I love that you're on this topic right now. Would you say, and yes, each attachment style has specific needs. Would you say, because often what I hear is investigators, they really have a hard time agreeing or accepting the need for the security guard, right? Their need for space, their need for autonomy, for independence. Is having those needs bad? And likewise for the investigator who has more of the need of like togetherness and, reassurance and validation, like are those needs quote unquote bad? Or is it just what it is, you know?
Yeah, what you're saying reminds me of that old proverb that there's nothing good or bad, but thinking makes it so. I think what can be more detrimental is the way we think about it, right? If we interpret it as a personal insult that someone else like needs some space to get themselves together, then that can be painful for us. Not necessarily bad, but painful. And then it can cause a problem within the relationship. Right. So I think the way we interpret it, going back to putting on our sort of like, if we think of self-compassion as our glasses or lenses from which we look at the world, if we can put those glasses back on and try to look at ourselves with compassion and our partners with compassion to say, okay, What I often encourage is getting a baby picture. Someone takes a baby picture out of the partner. Because let's say you're an investigator, you're in a relationship with a security guard who's always sort of minimizing the relationship or asking for more space, and it feels hurtful. And imagining that security guard as a baby, sort of crying in his crib. And rather than come and attend to his needs, his mother has been told, be careful, don't spoil the baby, don't hold the baby too much, let the baby cry it out. So she leaves him in the crib crying for hours and hours on end every day. And this baby learns that no one is really coming for him. So he has to entertain himself, deal with things himself. And so he just develops this pattern throughout life. And if you could sort of imagine that that child is crying and on a subconscious level, kind of learning these painful lessons and always, having to take care of himself, then it can make it easier to sort of like hold on to your Q-tip and remember that it feels very personal, of course, in a personal relationship, but it's really not. And as far as what you said about having those needs, if you think about the idea that those needs are caused, right? We have those needs for a reason. So if you grow up, so investigators tend to have an interpersonal history that there's only one real consistent thing that they can count on, and that is inconsistency, right? They never knew what to expect, whether their parents would be there and sensitive and present, or whether they would, maybe be absent or angry or role reversing or something else. So they kind of developed a skill of being very attuned and maybe having some chameleon tendencies so they could sort of morph themselves into whatever their caregivers may have expected. And so there's this undercurrent of anxiety, of concern about, okay, what's going on here? What clues do I have? What does this person love me? Are they going to be available? And there can be that undercurrent of anxiety where they're looking for that reassurance. And if you think about the behaviors of the security guard being caused, they tended to experience a lot of rejection and learned that no one was coming for them. So to kind of turn away from relationships, they may have elaborate collections. They may have hobbies that are very involved. They may have occupied themselves with other things that aren't as relational. Maybe they're involved in solitary sports like running, and they have other ways of sort of channeling their energy. Whereas, so basically, they have the opposite strategies. The security guard's strategy is deactivation. They're minimizing their attachment needs, their relationship needs. They're minimizing their emotions. They're minimizing connection and turning away. The investigator's strategy is activation, hyperactivation. So they're getting all riled up. They're putting all their energy into it, trying to figure it all out. And so, as we can imagine, this is a perfect storm, right? Because they're both using a different strategy to deal with their relationship needs. And it's not good or bad. I wouldn't say if you ask me, I wouldn't say that it's necessarily good or bad. It is what it is, right?
Right. And that's such a common, it's that push-pull dynamic, right? Of the anxious and the avoidant, for instance. And I do apologize. I'm in Los Angeles, like I mentioned, and there's just helicopters popping up everywhere all the time. So hopefully it doesn't
Oh,
ruin
I
the
can't even hear him. Yeah.
okay. Good. Okay, so that's so interesting. So I find that, in my work and talking to people, that's such a common dynamic, the investigator and the security guard. So what are some tips for people that are in this dynamic to make it work? And so much of it, like you mentioned, is not taking it personally because it's not personal. It's just our ways of coping and adapting to these, situations that we experienced. Understanding that we have different needs and having compassion for that. Anything else in terms of like skills that we can learn to make this relationship dynamic work?
Yeah, I think one thing is knowing which end of the continuum are you on. Do you tend to be more of an investigator are more of a security guard, because there are some different interventions and skills we can use depending on which side of the continuum you're on. So, for example, if you tend to be a security guard and your primary mode of dealing with stress and especially, relationships, your state of mind towards relationships when you're under stress is to deactivate, to distance, to avoid, to minimize, and sort of have this hypoactivation or deactivation strategy, then if you're working with a counselor or a coach or a marriage and family therapist, then they might be working with the security guard on, like, let's get a feeling wheel, or like we made a feeling flower, right? And to be a metaphor for letting your emotional literacy bloom, right? So there's going to be activities and interventions that help you activate and approach emotion and approach relationship a little bit at a time, sort of taking those baby steps to move, lean into that discomfort a little bit and be a little bit open to that emotion, be open to that discomfort, be open to, of course, you're risking rejection anytime you lean in,
Yeah.
but you're risking connection as well. And so, however, if you're the investigator, right, we're going to use some different skills because you have different coping mechanisms and strategies.
Right. Okay. And what would be some of the skills for the investigator and firefighter? Because we don't want to leave those out.
Right. So for the investigator, the investigator strategy is hyperactivation. So they kind of pour in a lot of energy and focus and attention to these relational needs and struggles, and can get sort of hyperactivated and overwhelmed and amped up. So if you think of like trauma responses, if you think of the fight, getting kind of really pumped up and ready to fight, or kind of fawning or engaging in pleasing behaviors, sort of identifying with the aggressor, and you may see more of that. So when it comes to that hyperactivation, we may want to look at deactivation strategies. So when you're feeling overwhelmed with emotion, maybe the investigator ignored their needs till they got to the boiling point, and they were patient, they were kind, they were accommodating, they were a chameleon of sorts, just constantly adjusting to meet the other person's needs, and then finally got to the point that they couldn't do that anymore, and then they became more explosive as they finally began to share their needs. So what we might look at is, how can you sort of use other skills to identify those emotions earlier on and be able to communicate them? But then also, when they do get to that point of overwhelm, what can you do? So, for example, if you get flooded with emotion, we have specific skills to help you feel better fast, right? Your heart rate goes up, your physiology goes up, you're totally overwhelmed and flooded. You can engage the human dive response, right? Where you're, if you're a place like you are in California or in Florida, and it's warm weather and you can go jump in cold water, some people will do that. Take a cold shower, put your face in cold water. And then there's other strategies, right? That, some of them we kind of walk through a roadmap in the book for each one, but that help you deactivate and bring that level of arousal down so that you can engage. And so, and one of those like ones to always be aware of is to, give yourself that 20-minute break, because when you're flooded and you're in that state, you're not going to be able to have a productive conversation, and to continue to push and have a conversation at that point could lead to more conflict that you might regret later. So saying, hey, what Daniel Amen, Dr. Amen, one of the amazing neuroscientists that I follow, who I was so excited that he endorsed my new book. But one of the things that he likes to say is to take a thick book into the bathroom, right? So take your book into the bathroom, say, hey, I just need a break, or I've got to use the restroom, stay in there for 20 minutes, let yourself calm down, and then come back to approach when you're feeling calm. So that's going to be the type of, and then there's many more different strategies. And for some, they're cold natured. They can't take a cold shower or jump in a cold pool, right? They're going to need some different strategies. So we keep adjusting to find what works. And we have a whole toolbox of tools. For the firefighter, like you asked, now the firefighter has the challenges that both the investigator and the security guard faced, right? Sometimes they dealt with constant inconsistency. They also dealt with a lot of rejection. So they could have developed both anxiety or avoidance, or they may have dealt with trauma or loss, depending on their history. And so one of the first steps that we're going to do is try to untangle the overwhelming emotions and look at, okay, what's anxiety? How does that feel? What are triggers for the anxiety? How can we catch it before it becomes overwhelming? What about the avoidance? How does that manifest? And then how can we reduce vulnerability to painful emotions? How can we help promote resilience? How can we help promote pleasant and positive events so that they are sort of putting deposits into their account so they don't get overdrawn as quickly and easily. And then depending on what the different triggers are in their life experiences, adjusting the interventions and tools based on what they need to cope with their current relationships or environment.
Yeah, because you were talking about, with the investigator and the security guard, how security guard, for instance, has a positive outlook on themselves, but negative outlook on others. Investigators have a negative outlook on themselves, positive outlook on others. But it sounds like the disorganized or firefighter tend to have a negative concept of self and also a negative concept of others. So it's like working on kind of shifting that relationship to themselves and also to others simultaneously.
Right. Clinton, so you described that as the grass is dead on both sides of the fence, right? Both perspectives are negative, and that can be very painful to believe that the self's not worthy of love and others aren't able to show love. But that's what their experience has taught them repeatedly over time. And so that's kind of the relationship rules that they adapted based on their circumstances. However, if they're here, if they're listening to this podcast, if they're coming to counseling, if they're, taking our assessments, reading the books, they're on that journey and they're ready to look at, okay, this was my style, this was my starting point. I can't start over and create a new beginning, but I can start from right here and create a new ending.
Oof.
And that's the hope that this work offers, right? You're not stuck with the style you have. You can become more secure. You can make it better.
Yeah, and
God,
it
the person of faith, I would say, I believe that God can allow opportunities into our lives and bring people into our lives that will help us find that pathway towards healing.
Yeah, and just to kind of piggyback off of that, it's gonna be a different flavor, It's like you're creating this new unique flavor of yourself. And so just really, make the best out of it. And thank you so much for your expertise and just kind of describing everything in really clear and great detail. I know that people are really going to get a lot out of this conversation. And where can people find you and your work and your book?
Oh, thank you so much for asking that, Jessica. So, my new book is called The Four Relationship Styles: How Attachment Theory Can Help You in Your Search for Lasting Love. So you can find it on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Target, Walmart, wherever books are sold. We also have some resources available, like a mini quiz. You can come to it my website, Dr. Anita Koonley, KUHNLEY.com. And if you click on books and then click on the pink book with the hearts, the four relationship styles, there's some information, there's a link to the quiz, and there's some bonuses that are available there. If you're on Instagram, I have an Instagram page at the period empathetic period counselor. And I try to post updates there. If you're a fan of Mr. Rogers, my last book was called The Mr. Rogers Effect. Seven Secrets to Bring Out the Best in Yourself and Others from America's Beloved Neighbor. You can also visit the MrRogersEffect.com to find out more on that. But one of the things you mentioned, Jessica, was, how can people become more secure? And one of my favorite tools for that works for any of the styles, actually, I learned from Mr. Rogers, who the American Counseling Association calls, in some of the blogs, America's Children's Television Therapist. Did you ever watch Mr. Rogers?
I did very little. My parents are both Brazilian, so we like he just was non-existent in Brazil, you know.
I
But
see.
I
Okay.
am, yeah, I'm vaguely familiar with Mr. Rogers.
Yes. He
Yeah.
was just on in the US and Canada for about 30 years, but I'm sad the rest of the world missed out. But but some of his episodes are still on YouTube, and he always wore his cardigan sweater. And at the beginning of every episode, he came into his television house singing, "It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. It's a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? Won't you be my neighbor? I've always wanted a neighbor just like you." Anyway,
Okay, you're making me cry. Anita, I'm crying.
oh.
This whole conversation is making me teary-eyed, but okay, I love
Oh, hopefully in a good way. And then he'd zip up his put on his cardigan, and that represented, okay, we're gonna have this cozy time of togetherness. And then at the end, he would do the same thing. He would sing a song and he would take off his cardigan. But every time he spoke, every time he received an award or spoke at a graduation, he would do this one activity, and he would ask people this really important question. And he would say, if you take a moment to think about where you are today. So Jessica, you do this wonderful podcast to minister to so many people and encourage them in their journeys of healing, and share with them resources and create resources and do therapy and coaching and all these things to help people on their healing journey. And chances are there are people along your journey that loved you into being who you are today. Chances are there's someone who helped you along that journey to become who you are. They may be close by, they may be even in the room with you, they may be far away, or they may be in heaven. But their chances are someone that loved you into becoming who you are. And if you could take just the moment to think about that person. And then he would encourage people to take 10 seconds and say, "I'll keep the time." And then he would remind them how happy that person would be to know that in this moment you thought of them and how they loved you into being who you are today. When I ask students that question, I ask them to do that exercise, and I say, "How are you feeling now?" After they do it, a lot of times people will say grateful, thankful, warm, loved, all these feelings that go along with feelings of security. And I called it the 10-second transformation exercise, right? Because it's brief. But Mr. Rogers was the master connector. He was surely a networker, and he helped people to feel connected to their own network, and to feel loved and to remember the people that love them and into being who they are. So if you're ever going into a situation and you want to feel secure, you want to do what you would do if you felt secure, you can think of Mr. Rogers, you can think of that cardigan comfort, the people that loved you into being, and then take that state of mind into your conversation and into your meeting or whatever your next thing is, and allow yourself to do what you would do if you felt secure, and prime that security.
Yeah, that just, I feel fuzzy inside. That's how I
Love that.
feel. Yeah, and I love that. That's so, what a great exercise. So you're saying that, the more that we can kind of cultivate that those feelings and that sense of security within us, the more that we can, like it feels more permanent, or the more that it's like more, we can express that more with others. So of course, like, with any practice or exercise, the more we practice, the stronger we become at it. Is this same, would that apply to this exercise as well? Like the more we do that, the more, I don't know, comfortable we are with that security or the more permanent it feels. Like, what would you say?
Yeah, it's that power of association. The more often we take the time to kind of visualize that person, visualize maybe the support and love they showed to us, or how they were there for us on the journey of becoming who we are, and we allow ourselves to feel those feelings and think those thoughts. We can also, what I sometimes do with my students or clients, like I just a lot in test anxiety too, is that you can make an association. So you can like snap your fingers, or you can tap your foot, or something more discreet, just kind of rub your cheek, whatever you want your physical gesture to be. You can match a gesture with a visualization. And as you practice it, let's say just every morning, you take 10 seconds to practice gratitude and think about someone who loved you into being who you are. And when you get to the peak of feeling loved and cared for and nurtured, you snap your fingers, right? If you do this over and over and over and over again, it's like Pavlov's dogs ringing the bell and they salivate. Like you can snap your fingers and become and feel more secure in that moment. And you can then take that with you into creating more secure interactions in your life.
Got it. So many cool tips and strategies to really harness all of this. And something that I like to remind myself too, and my clients is again, it's a practice. You take these tools and these skills, and it's we have to make it a practice to incorporate it into our daily lives.
The more that we practice it, the more that we work on it, the better. So I love that you're encouraging that sort of ongoing focus and that ongoing mindfulness.
Well, thank you so much, Anita. You have put tears in my
Well,
eyes.
thank you, Jessica. We covered a lot of ground here today, right?
Oh, I know. And yeah, just the way you expressed everything, it was just so eloquent and easy to understand. So I always appreciate that. And yeah, I will be sure to share your information in the show notes. Definitely check out her books, follow her on Instagram, follow her work. Yeah, I'll catch you around. Thank you so much for listening. If you are ready to shift your attachment patterns and embody your secure self using the attachment theory framework and my favorite evidence-based strategies, you can learn more about my 8-week one-on-one attachment coaching program. And if you enjoyed this episode, please leave a rating or a comment. Hearing your feedback is extremely motivating, and I always, always appreciate it. Thanks again, and catch you on the next episode.